Yes, but I always wonder, I mean, it's such a noise. There was such a noise in the SCR, and how can one converse, really?
I can't. We just sat in the corner, just two of us here.
Yeah, no.
There's all his wife was there. He was there. His host was Isaacson. Came in afterwards. Who else was there? Gandhi, I think. He was a great friend.
Now,
tell me about Professor Gil Seven.
Personally, I don't know him.
We never see him.
I'll probably see him. I mean, he runs a seminar on Tuesdays on oral history. I thought that I'd come. It's in the Middle East Center. I'll come to know him personally, but from his writings, he doesn't appear to be impressive.
I know nothing about him. I heard this afternoon at lunch from some fellow Maudlin. He was not good looking, young, and manages to be not anti-Israeli.
Well, if he manages, not in his writings.
Can that be true?
He had an article in the TLS which was rather strongly.
He won't. I know nothing about him.
But I'll
what was that, that review of?
Several. So, you know, the atmosphere in the Middle East Center is much better now. The academic standard is nil, I mean. But there are less Arabs in general in the college and in Oxford. And less Palestinians. I mean, you don't feel, it's very different from, let's say, 7, 8, 9, 10.
That's really interesting.
I mean, not only in the college.
Who
are
the Middle East Center?
And, I mean, in Oxford in general.
Yes.
And
who are the Middle East Center?
Who are? Well, the main figure is Roger Owen, who has become a solid economic historian of the Ottoman Empire. I think nearly overcame his leftist period, which really impaired his historiographical. He followed those fashionable agrarian instruments, and it was I'm not sure that he really got rid of him entirely, but he's a solid historian.
Yes, always.
A certain Derek Hopwood, who rotates with him the chairmanship of the center, who is good for nothing. He's good bibliographer. A very good professor of literature, Mustafa Badawi, who is also fellow of Fresno. He's Egyptian, but he's expert on Yeats on the one hand, but on Arab literature on the other hand. Very nice man. Like old regime Egyptians. He's probably 60 years old or so. Well, I think that the permanent fellows, they are the three. There was a lectureship for modern Middle East history. It used to be the readership of Albert. Then it was a lectureship. The readership was a personal appointment for Albert. I think it's frozen now. I mean, the university is frozen. And now, there is a reader in international relations, not in the Middle East Center, who replaced Adam Roberts. His name is Avi Schleim. He's an Iraqi Jew.
Avi?
Schleim.
What is
S-C-H? S-C-H-L-E-I-M. And it's an Iraqi name.
Schleim.
Schleim. He wrote on...
Avi is his first name.
Avi. Avi is probably the short name of Abraham or something. From an Iraqi Jewish family who emigrated to Palestine in the 50s. Command perfect Hebrew. Married, I think, to the granddaughter of Lloyd George. Very nice man. I'm not very shrewd. He writes on Middle Eastern affairs, on Israel, I mean, he has the benefit of knowing Hebrew. He's now publishing a book on the triangle Britain, Israel, Jordan. He will probably teach partly modern.
I've never heard of him.
He was in Reading. He was a reader in Reading. People like him. Nothing to write home about. But he's a nice man.
But is he Israeli?
He's not Israeli. And he has, he holds grudge for the, his childhood in Israel. You know, among all the waves of immigration, the most successful immigration after 48 was the Iraqi. In many ways, like the Yekes before 48, and there are many affinities. But on the other hand, unlike the Yekes, they all have inner bitterness and grudge. They will never forgive the 2-3 years in the tents. Most of them came from a well-to-do family.
And they were degraded.
They were degraded. Now, like, the Yekes were ready to face it. They behaved all right.
They didn't like it, but they still
didn't like it. But
still better than the Nazis.
They couldn't see the
better than the Nazis, yes.
They couldn't see their parents. Those middle parents who were merchant, middle class.
Like Kiduri.
Exactly. But they are very good Israelis. They are entirely integrated.
And then the Arab?
Part of them, yes. They are not so. They are hopes. Many of them, not all of them. Now there is a new generation. The Iraqi elite of intellectuals are not hopes. The Iraqi politicians are hopes. Among the North Africans, there are more doves than among the Iraqis, and it's the influence of the relatives in Paris. All Moroccans have relatives in Paris, many of them are on the left, But there is not But the Moroccans were not integrated like the Iraqis.
No.
You see, when I always claim that the Iraqi Jews are in many ways like the Yekes. It's the only community that really went down by immigrating to
Israel,
like the Yekes. Now, and they are very hardworking, have tradition of education, Yiddish manners and so on, a very good mind for economics, banking, and to me the symbolic act was half a year ago when an Iraqi Jew was nominated the Director General of Bank Leumi. It was Anglo-Palestine. It's the tradition of Hofian and Baal.
See, that is terrific.
That's the real.
The real came up.
Yes. There are many professors and they are well to do.
Who is there?
His name is Bino Tzadik. He grew up in a Ma'abara, in tent camp, and in Ayeret Olim. Really, he's a self-made man, very able. People have their doubts, how is he good in international banking? But he did very well in a banking director.
That reminds me of something I have to talk to you about. Ma'abara reminds me of Havara.
Yes. And, that's it. Economically, they were well off very soon. Some of them brought money, and they were very hardworking. Socially, it took some time, and they're now all right. As I said, some of them don't...
It's a sediment. Sediment of business. Being treated socially looked down on. That's true of Slime, too.
People tell me that he speaks about it from time to time. Now, politically, he's very critical of Ben-Gurion.
He's what?
Critical of the Ben-Gurion years, and he reads to the documents more than there is. He's not wise enough to be a good historian, but he's a very, very nice man. Very nice man to talk to, and he was just now elected to the leadership when Adam Roberts took the chair, you know. Well, that's more or less.
He does international relations.
Yes. He's a reader of international relations, but he specializes on the Middle East. But it's international relations that he teaches. Very nice man. Very nice man. I hear that his wife is very nice. And you see, and he has no problem. He speaks
Hebrew. His wife is Welsh.
Whenever he meets Israelis, he speaks Hebrew. I mean, he has got this complex.
No complex, yeah.
You see. From this point of view, it's fine. And very nice to... I mean, it's very nice.
It's all we can ask for.
Pardon?
We can't ask much more.
Yeah, really. Yeah. And many Israelis.
Very Israeli patriots would do us no good.
Yeah.
No, I tell you what, Avara. Reminds you of Mavara Avara. As you know, I have this obsession about the need to write a book about the Nazi Zionist relations. I told you about this.
Yes, yes.
And I found this good woman who has written a book on the Holocaust in Italy.
Ah, yes, the one who published now the book.
Zuccotti.
Yes, Zuccotti.
I met her. She's a pure wasp. She's a straight New York Protestant Anglican girl. Married to an Italian descended a lawyer in New York. That's why the name. But she is Italian. She's a Gentile. She's very honest. I went to a lecture in London, the Italian Institute.
I think not.
Clear, honest, interesting, perfectly fair-minded. She's done the research. She's very human. She's, they speak anti-Nazi in a proper way. It's all very noble and honorable and good. And very, very un-Jewish. I thought she was the perfect person to do this, if she was shown the documents. I thought my suspicion of the attaché would be so, they'd be anxious, they'd go ahead. So the book might you speak for her. Also, I would speak for another Jews could be found to say she was a plikashe. Now I learn from a man called Ozen, whom I know. This is a letter, not a written letter, by Bijan, that, of course, as might have been expected, Yehuda Bauer is writing a book on that very subject. Mm-hmm. In a way, that's a disaster. I don't think it can be stopped. It is a subject. What else can you do? Commissioned by the Institute of Jewish Affairs in London, as they did when I put the dear Zuccotti, they said nothing about the commission of the book. A written book written by a Jew, a Zionist, and an Israeli, is not authoritative on that subject. It will be thought to be biased, only inevitable. And we thought he probably doesn't tell the full story, he probably conceals more embarrassing episodes of which there must be some. And so hides a few things. There's nothing been done, I think. Just unfortunate.
When you thought of commissioning the book, under which auspices did you think?
No, there is a committee called the American English Jewish Diaspora Trust or something. They said they would pay. Because she would need research assistance.
Yeah.
German, Yiddish, Hebrew, Hungarian, all that. Our author doesn't know all these languages.
Yeah. Well,
never mind. That's what I thought. And I thought you'd take 3 years, not less.
I'll tell you, there is a room for the two books.
No, because they can't be done simultaneously.
Why?
Because Bauer will ensure the material. For obvious reasons. She just worked. It's his field. It's his monopoly. It's his life. It's what he exists for.
Yeah, well... Yeah, well, maybe he personally will behave this way, but generally speaking, there will be entirely different books.
Of course they will. What I mean is, she has to get some very sensitive material.
Yeah.
Bauer probably knows where it is, what if Israeli book, he can't encourage your rival for the very moment of writing.
You will probably finish the book before she.
Israel has not begun it.
Yes, but he has enough arms. He
knows it very well.
Knows a lot.
He's lived in that. He lived in that.
Yes, I mean. And...
No, the book will probably also take two, at least 2 years.
And hers will take more than 3 years. If she's mostly new to the subject, and you die about her, so it will take 4 years. I mean, she will come out after him, 2 years after him. And
I think we have to wait for his book to
appear. One can persuade them that, I mean, that there is a need for a book by a Gentile. I mean,
I understand, but I think in that case one has to wait.
But let's wait.
For Bauer to publish his book.
Yeah.
Then she can use it.
Yeah.
On top of that, she knows what she likes.
And we'll see how the book will be received. I mean, Bauer, what I don't like in him, but it can be an asset in this book, he is a politician.
Sure.
He's not a historian. But he's a politician in this respect, in the good sense. He knows what the sensitivity is about the subject and what people suspect, and he will cope with it. Which means I believe the book will be better than you expect.
Oh, no, I don't expect
it. No, from the point of view that you said. And then there will be a room anyway for another book. And she is young.
The only thing with Bauer is wrong. He's a Jew in Israeli.
Yeah, and I see what you mean.
Him.
Yeah, I see, yes.
For this purpose.
Yeah.
However good this book is, it will not stop the mouths of anti-Semites.
Yeah.
You see? No book published in Jerusalem. Jerusalem or under Jewish hospices. Obviously an apologetic book. Obviously it will be assumed it doesn't tell the truth.
Yeah.
You see? It doesn't matter how good or bad it is.
Yeah, that I can see.
You see?
That I can see. Though, you see, yes. Yeah. Well, I mean...
There's nothing you can tell me or I can tell you. All I can do is I'll have to put it to the people who want to put up the money. And I'll have to write to Mr. Zuccotti, my brother over in Paris, with a long talk with him, extremely nice woman, perfect for her, saying that she must wait. She's now writing for the Holocaust in France.
I see.
It'll anyway take another year.
I see. Wrong.
There's no what?
Even more.
Because
you see, there is new material now in France. And
is there really?
Yeah. I mean, new books now. And I mean, there is a new book on Pétain. I read the review now. Apparently, the writer managed to find some new material. And in French historiography, that now only starts the stages of trying to deal with it Yes, but still, I mean, that's the background.
Relevant.
And I mean,
Pétain was terrific at sea.
Even those who try to rehabilitate Pétain, and there are many, and some solid people, can't explain his attitude to Jews. I mean,
it just was an old-fashioned Catholic.
Yeah, exactly.
And bitter anti-Semite.
Exactly.
Anti-Dreyfus.
Yeah.
I mean, exactly
yeah.
so. Simply straightforward, and this typical French Catholic journal. There are plenty of such people in France.
Uh-huh.
Explain, you can't explain. The point is that, of course you can defend him. He tried to save France, etc. Tried to make things easier, save lives. Probably did. That's not the point.
But for your purpose, even Zuccotti will not solve the problem. You need a reputed either German historian or continental historian who is for writing the book you want on Nazi-German relations. One that has already established a real reputation of an historian, and I am sure that there are some Germans that would be ready to do it, because Nolte really, upset them.
Yeah, I know, but they will not be allowed to look at the documents.
I'm not sure.
Our people.
They will understand. I mean, after all, even the people in Israel, I mean, like Bauer and others, they understand the need not less than you, sometimes...
But look, Nazi-German-Zionist relations is a comparatively small subject.
Yeah.
Not that way, it's not a question of Jews, Germans. Yeah. It's not the same subject. It simply is a subject of Pentecolic and Eichmann. You know what I mean? And
Gabriel. I know what you mean.
That's all it is.
I know.
It's the story of Kastner.
Yeah.
It's the story
By the way, Judah Bauer, for his knowledge is the best.
Who?
Judah Bauer. To copy this. I mean, every book will, I mean,
He's the authority.
On those problems.
On those problems.
Yes.
He knows
on Kastner no. and...
I'm sure that's right. Maybe you ought to write it first, and
yes.
then
I think that's
profit by it.
That. But then, no, what I had in mind is that if, let's say, one of the young Mommsens or one who is fell off...
They are not interested in Zionists.
Yeah, that's
Jews, true. Yes. No. Of course, our problem is the Jews. No. They are only interested in persecution.
No.
Holocaust. That is not all the same subject. Completely different subject.
Yeah.
How far were the Zionist favorites of the Gestapo got...
I see what you... I know what you mean. And I know how important it is, I know.
What were the conversations of these Judenräte?
Yes. I know what you mean.
I'm talking about.
And
all the things that Hannah Arendt accused them of.
And I fully realized the necessity. I mean, the other night, in St. Anthony's, in a high table, Alan Bullock was with his wife, and a certain writer, Alastair Horn, you may know him.
I know him, yes.
Was there.
He's not at all favorable to Israel. I know.
That I found out already in the conference in Suez.
I didn't find it out yesterday next to him.
Yes, you easily find it out. He has his memoirs of 1946 in Palestine. He was a young intelligence officer. But he was sitting... he admires Bullock because when he, Alastair Horn, published his first book, Bullock reviewed it positively and so on and so forth. And he told Lady Bullock, and then he asked, what's your husband's opinion of David Irving?
David?
Irving. David Irving is this
small...
So she was taken aback and said immediately, I don't know, except that if he could, he would hang him.
Yes.
And Alastair Horn...
Correct.
And Alastair Horn was...
Taken aback.
Because that means that he is ready to judge. I mean, not that he's in favor, but maybe there is
something.
And this reply, really, I mean, I
very good reply.
Very good.
That was Nibi.
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 It's
a very good answer. Very good answer.
Yeah. Exprompto, you see, no, it was superb.
Same is true of Trevor Roper. Same is true of Trevor Roper. And also Engel. And the libel suit against him.
Yeah, I know.
Or whatever it was.
I know.
Certainly. You know, that's certain politics. Well, maybe, how can one tell? Did Hitler really not know? Wants to go into it?
And all other, you see, I mean, they all have visionist attitude.
What?
There are no 6 million, I mean, and so on and so forth. I mean, Well, are you ready that we'll start?
Yes, I'm ready.
Start?
One more.
Yes.
Nothing is worried about Trudy Stanford from mayor. Again, the usual
name. I know, he's very nervous.
And then tremendous, yes. And then the usual denunciation of the Rabbanim, that I would say, that's very too awful. What's going on? West and West. And he says university is going down here, Jerusalem. From Jewish studies, he says, they're declining.
Yeah,
who are Jewish studies in Jerusalem?
Oh, it's a tragedy. It's a tragedy. But, I mean, let's discuss it later.
All right? Okay.
I mean, because I have to discuss with you Fried and the college and everything,
yes,
but later.
All right.
I had a very good talk with him, but I was...
With Fried?
Yes.
I'm
but you prepared the ground, of course.
I'm seeing Fried on Tuesday.
Yes. So we'll discuss it after we'll do some. All right?
Yes.
Because we canceled 3 meetings.
I know.
No, it's all right. Now,
Wait, let's go over the meetings. Let's just verify.
Really?
Medieval Christian order. Cool. No, look, let's do read now. Much easier.
Not now, it'll because then we... No, it will not, it will take...
No,
it will
not take. Stay all the way. So the whole story is
really?
Violent attack on you. Uh-huh. Violent.
Very interesting.
Minor attack on Jameson, who didn't speak and agreed with Gibbon, was obviously not the right subject.
Very interesting.
But the main thing is ferocious attack on you.
I'm sure he's right, but why should he put him in introduction?
I know. Can't help it.
He can't help it.
It festered for years.
He can't help it.
It festered for years to find a program.
Oh, it's a real pity. He's able, and he got his now his
status. He's been indignant. He gives him very like an enemy. He's almost a hated Gip for years. He's finding himself a little foot. What he says about Gip is quite correct.
Yes, I'm sure. I mean, that I'm sure. Ellie is paranoid. I mean, sometimes
I just wonder what his relation with Joel in the LSE are from the close colleagues.
Yeah, I
all right.
Yeah, I think that it was all right.
Must have made it up.
Yeah. But generally speaking, he's very paranoid. And everything is either black or white.
It is paranoid. It is. I wouldn't like him to write a book on Zionist Nazis. Yes, but...
Yeah, no, certainly not. Though he changed a lot.
Yes.
But not when it comes to his traumas. That's true. Not when it comes to his traumas.
Traumas come from the Arabs.
Yes.
And the Arabs and ultimately the Zionists.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Nationalism
is
an invention of these horrible Western Jews.
Yeah. Well.
Okay.
Fine. I mean, what I have in mind now is I thought to devote, at least a good part of this meeting and maybe more for personal questions.
Go on, go forward.
All right. And then I have my plan, but you don't want to know. All right. All right. Now, let's go back to your family. Your childhood in London and your family. What was the attitude in the family to religion, to going?
Yes. Religion. Both my parents, of course, were brought up in typical religious circumstances of the Hasidic colony of Riga. My father was a kind of favorite because he was the favorite grandson of his pseudo-grandfather, of his father's adoptive father, who was a millionaire, I told you why. And therefore, this bright boy, he went to polytechnic in Riga, not to university anymore. He grew a beard, he went to the synagogue, did what every observant Jew in Riga did. There was no kind, but on the whole, his behavior was typical of that of a member of the Church of England. I mean, he was not particularly interested in Jewish religion, he knew what he had to do. He learned to sit around Talmud, he learned the Bible, he did the ordinary Jewish education. But there wasn't any particular emphasis. He was not in any way super pious. He was conventionally brought up, Orthodox Jew of the Riga, so to speak, Hasidic community.
Which was the minority in the Jewish community.
Certainly.
Not only the Hasidic, most Jews in Riga were not of a religious at all, I think.
You can't say that, no. Numerically that is not true. I don't know about the demography.
Yeah.
My impression is that the Jews in Riga were divided into three categories. There were the German Jews.
Yes.
They were certainly not religious. They sent their children, I told you, I think, to Berlin and Königsberg. And not to Russian universities. They could go to Russian universities, but why should they?
Why should they?
They spoke German, they were part of the Yankee city,
yes.
German establishment.
Yeah.
I knew some of them, of course. There were, that was the top-notch socialists. Some of these people then obtained office under the Latvian government. So they were probably literate and useful. Yes. Even your ministers and for that. Then there were the Russian Jews who were bourgeois, not particularly religious.
Yes.
That was the milieu in which my parents lived, although because of their family, they were, so to speak, pious. The others probably did not necessarily eat kosher. That was the ordinary,
yes,
Riga Jewish middle class Jewish community. And there were intermediate types between that and the German community, like Leibovitch, who comes from a Eastern European, I mean Russian Jewish. Russian Jews, not German Jews. But nevertheless he went to Berlin, his sister went to Berlin, they became assimilated to the more educated sections. Underneath all that was the ghetto.
There was a ghetto.
There was a self-created ghetto. Yeah. It was an official ghetto. So
yes,
that was called the ghetto lived on something called the Rote Dvina, Red Dvina. The river was Dvina in Russian and Dvina in German. Rote Dvina was the Yiddish word. That was a section of Riga called the Red Dvina, and that was Yiddish speaking shtetl stuff. Socially and religiously straight shtetl. That is what my mother was eating.
And did she come from Lithuania or?
The family came from Western Russia.
Western.
I don't know whether it's Lithuania actually. I'll tell you. She was born. I think I want to forgot it. Was the name of the shtetl. I wouldn't say it was Lithuania, no. It's simply one of the Western.
But many came from
Western Russia. Here.
Yes. Yes.
The rich Berlins came from a place called Suraj, which is certainly today was Poland at one time. But I think it was Lithuania at some other time.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose, right, yeah. Now,
it will pop up by another individual. But of course, the Hasidim tended towards Lubavitch. This was the Rebbe was. And that was the center of interest of my family because they were descended from their Zalmanis.
Now, was the, and your grandfather, no, the grandfather of your father, who was a rich man, was it your grandfather or his grandfather?
It's, no. It was my father's pseudo-grandfather.
Pseudo-grandfather.
Adopted grandfather.
Yeah.
He was a millionaire.
He was a millionaire, a Hasidic.
He created his own synagogue.
He did, yeah.
To which my family went. Some kind of shtibel. Went to the synagogue, which he created, paid for, which was attended by members of his star people he employed. It was a company with him.
Yeah. And he was the major figure of the Hasidic community?
Easily.
By far.
Easily.
And
he is his brother.
He is
brother. His brother was a brother.
And your father was used to belong to a family of, eminence among the Jewish community.
In Riga.
In Riga.
Only because of that.
Yes.
Because he bought an Berlin.
Yes.
And Berlin were rich merchants. There were other rich merchants, for example, the Shalit family.
Yes.
Whom there are represented in Israel.
Yes.
They were nothing like so rich as Berlin. But still, they were prominent. They were also Hasidim. Also, I think they were Hasidim.
That I didn't know. Oh, there were other rich families.
Patriarch Shalit in particular were very liable with my family. I mean, they knew each other very
intimately. Yes, all these
people. Exactly, they were very connected socially. What other rich families were there? Not very many rich.
Not among the Hasidim, but among the German-speaking, I think there were.
Not very many, no. No, after the war there were.
After
the revolution.
After the war.
They were in the Nouveau Riche.
Yes.
That existed.
Yes.
But that's before the revolution.
I see.
I do think the German Jews were very, very good. Quite prosperous, but not millionaires. None of them were. I mean, Eisenstein comes from Riga, the film producer. He was born in Riga. His father was baptized as an engineer. You see? All right, that's a typical, however you speak, Russian speak. Riga Jew, who became baptized and left the community. That is very typical. Wales comes from Riga.
I mean, there were some families who came to Palestine in the late 20s.
Akhti, for example, that straight ghetto.
Yes, he's not, yes, he was not rich anymore.
Straight ghetto.
Yes, I know.
Really?
But there were five families who came and established Elite, the factory of chocolate.
From Riga.
All of them from Riga.
What do they call it?
Moshevich, Kopilov.
Moshevich?
Moshevich.
Moshevich.
Kopilov.
Yeah.
Fromchenko.
They all came very rich in Israel.
Right, Ken. I mean, they came with some money.
Certainly. But not, yes. They came when?
In the late 20s. Early
after the revolution.
Yes, I see what you mean. That's different. Yes, I mean, my grandfather belonged to the...
Smolyan,
yeah.
Who was a millionaire in the 20s. It's a completely different picture. By that time, we were gone.
No, that I can see.
By that time, the relation we left.
I see.
The relation never had any money.
Yes.
The only person who had money in my family was my father. You see, he's the young... My, for example... mother's uncle, who is head of the Jewish community, who is called Viktor Volchonok, which is my mother's name. Volchonok is a corruption of Volchonok. Volchonok is the Russian for a wolf cub. It's a Russification of wolf. Because German names you can't have. So for some reason it's Russified. These were German.
Yes,
my father after the revolution was not rich. But before the revolution evolves.
I think
he already began to evolve in the direction of non-observance long before the war. So when he went, he married my mother in, I don't know when he married Emerson. He married her, you see. He was born in 1880. He was born in 1883. She was born in 1880. I think she was probably. She was 19, 4 or 5 minutes ago, 3, 4, 5. When they went to England for the first time, he did not eat for kosher.
He didn't eat?
He went abroad, did not eat kosher.
I see.
I don't think this is reported in Riga.
Yes, of course.
He had no,
but he didn't mind. He didn't mind.
Nor my
he wouldn't like his parents to know.
No. Nor my mother.
No, not little
not
mother.
At all, by that time.
Fantastic.
I'll tell you a story about that, then you'll know that.
Fantastic.
But so long as they live inside this community, in Riga, they conformed. It was quite natural to conform.
Yeah.
They were not shocked by his absence. When my aunt ran off with a Latvian sculptor to Paris, my mother's sister, they practically said Shiva for her. Terrible thing. Goy and obviously his mistress and every horror at Paris. Nevertheless, When she came back to the family, she was absorbed without difficulty. And she stayed in Russia the rest of her life.
And what?
She stayed in Russia the rest of her life, married a Russian, non-Jew,
yes.
Grandson of the patriarch.
Really?
You see? And remained in Moscow to the end of her days. She was some kind of minor civil servant.
So that's one. Aunt and then Mrs. Samunov, the other aunt?
That was my mother's next sister.
Yeah.
She married Mizrahi, called Samunov, who was son of the rabbi of Vindau.
Who was Zamenhof, wasn't he?
What? Zamenhof
originally. Yes.
Changed again his Russification.
Yes.
Zamenhof is right.
Yes.
And he was a very respected rabbi in Zindal, not at all like the Hasidim, least honorable, well-dressed, perfectly decent German type of Hasidic rabbi.
And your mother was from a Hasidic family?
Certainly. First cousin of my father.
Ah, she was third cousin.
My mother's mother, my father's father, brother and sister. They're both descended from...
From Schmelzen. Now...
But my mother's father was a very poor man, employed by Berlin. Since, you see, she was my father's first cousin, her father was automatically employed by the rich man. So was his brother. There were other members then.
Now then...
It was a clan.
Yeah. And the name Berlin... does it go in the family, of your adopted grandfather?
Nobody knows.
Nobody knows. Well, told me once.
His father certainly was called that.
Yes.
We're now in 1850, yes. 40. How far back it goes?
You don't know.
I don't know. I'm sure it has nothing to do with the town.
Yeah.
I'm sure. Why should it?
And nothing to do with the rabbi that you don't like?
No relation. Which rabbi? You mean?
Mayberlin.
I didn't dislike him?
Yes, yes. I mean, he once wrote to me...
Political
if
priest.
If there ever was a political priest...
That is he. Absolutely true.
Yeah.
I didn't dislike him. I was in very good terms with him.
Yeah, yes, but I mean...
He was amusing.
That's not...
Yes, he certainly was a...
Yes, yes. And he caused Weizmann troubles.
Did he?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, he was always on the hawkish side. He criticized him in 44, 45 when he came back from New York.
Could well be.
But he was able.
He saw me in the embassy in New York, in Washington. He used to come and see me. He was my uncle's relation.
Uh-huh.
He was a close relation to Samunov.
Uh-huh.
Samunov's mother, Yitzhak Samunov, the husband of Ida, my aunt.
Yes.
Svia. Ida. His mother was the daughter of Chaim Berlin, who was head of the Volozhin Yeshiva. That was Mayor Berlin's family.
And that's my road. Around Berlin Street is Chaim Berlin.
That's me. Yes.
He was an eminent Volozhin
Yeshiva. He was named head of the Volozhin Yeshiva, and he was Yitzchak Samunov's grandfather. Quite straightforwardly. His daughter married the rabbi Zinda. His Rome is Nagdim.
Oh, that's what I was going to say.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And it was not that common in those days to, from Isnogin to marry Hasidim.
It was not.
It was married, probably.
By this time,
yes.
It was no longer an injection.
Yeah.
By 19, I don't know what, 10 or 8 or 7, nobody paid any attention. These people, no. These are not fanatical at all.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah,
but
I see
my uncle was brought up. My uncle was, as you know, an early Zionist who never called himself Isaac Yitzchok on his plate as a barrister. He was a lawyer in Petersburg. On his plate, it was written Yitzchok Samunov. It was uncommon. Hebrew to Hebrew. And he was 100% Zionist, which certainly his father was not. The Rav Samunov.
So, I mean, in his generation, he was the Zionist.
He was super, absolutely. Moved entirely Zionist circles. And came along to convert my aunt.
He converted your aunt?
No doubt.
And your parents?
Oh, that's a different story. My father was not Zionist. He was not anti. He thought it was a utopian. He didn't think it would happen. He had no particular feeling about it. My mother was, from my memories of her, 100% Jewish nationalist.
Yeah.
She didn't belong to any Zionist group. And she didn't know Hebrew. But she was always conscious of being nothing but Jewish. No nonsense. She went to a German school. Her German was perfect. Her Russian was perfectly good. She spoke Yiddish, because otherwise she couldn't communicate with her parents. But the point about that was, she had absolutely no doubt the Jews were Jews, and she strongly sympathized with the Zionist movement without becoming politically associated. But when we went to say that. The point about her was she was terribly anti-assimilation. And when she... Exactly. When we went to Petrograd, when the Balfour Declaration was declared, my mother was triumphant. As many Jews were.
Yes,
this is a common triumph. My uncle, of course, was already professionally connected. But my mother was not a member of any societies. She did the blue and white flags. But nevertheless, I was taken to parties at which schoolboys marched up and down with some kind of Magin David emblems made of silver, that kind of thing. And songs were sung at these meetings, which I still remember, which were the early Zionist songs, like Dort wo die Zedern, Shamaya Harazim. You know that song?
Yes.
Well, it was sung in German.
Yeah.
It was originally in German. Dort wo die Zedern, I can't remember, the Wolken something, something. And Antiqua, of course, was sung. And I'll tell you a story about my mother. I was given a Zionist student as a tutor in Petrograd. I was not sent to school because by 1916, I was supposed to be too young. I was given a governess, who was a Jewish, a Jewess, and given as a tutor, Michael Zamsky. He was a student in the University of Samara. He was a straightforward, kind of typical Russian Jewish Zionist who went to Palestine and lost touch with his kid.
And his name became
Vansky.
Ben Zion Eshel.
You know that?
You told me that you had him as a teacher 25 years ago.
You investigated.
And I found out that he became Ben Zion Eshel.
He was Ben Zion Vansky.
And he was... a teacher, and a teacher in general, and geography particular, and there was the names committee of the Keren Keyemet. In the good high days of the Keren Keyemet, the nomination, the names committee of Keren Keyemet was very important because they would decide for every
set.
Yes, and he was an eminent member of this committee. I mean, representing knowledge, historical and archaeological knowledge. Whenever you could find biblical name...
He was an absolutely decent man.
Yeah.
That I can assure you. Yeah. He must have died when?
Probably 25 years ago, or maybe...
I blame myself, I never looked him up.
Yeah.
I didn't know how to find him.
Yeah. So I found out later.
My aunt knew him, also did nothing about him. Anyhow, that was my teacher, and he made me write little Hebrew poems.
I was going to ask you about him because you
he
mentioned
taught me Hebrew.
I didn't know where he taught you, whether in Petrograd or in London. Now
in Petrograd every morning, yes. And I used my little poems, which are called Hadashot Labgadim. That's what it's called. That's what gave me my deep Hebrew consciousness.
So that's the origin of
that's
your
root.
And that's your mother?
That's my mother, Wayne Newton. I was also given the Rosh Yeshiva to teach the Talmud. It bored me to a degree I can't convince you. So I read it, but it didn't take. He was called Rav Ber, and he was the head of the Pony Division, I think, at that time.
So how was he in Petrograd?
Because it was shut, closed by the revolution.
Really? I mean, a head of a yeshiva?
Closed by the revolution.
I see. You mean after the revolution?
17.
After the
revolution. Once he already appeared in 16.
I see.
End of 16.
I see.
But Rebern appeared somewhere in 17.
I see.
When he had to make a living. All you show up to close by.
I see.
You see, the immigration is later. All this business in Israel, it's, I don't know what the continuity is. But he was at a funny village. And he was a very nice man, but failed to make big interest in our trade. I was terribly bored about Shosh Nagach Mapara.
You remember Shosh
Nagach Mapara? Shosh
Nagach.
Beginning of Baba Kama.
Yes.
Baba Kama.
And it was boring. Never, you were never...
Unbelievable. Yeah. Still, I mean, I learned, I knew what it was. I don't know the technique. I understood. I know what the tablet is. Otherwise, I wouldn't have known. You see, there was no halakha b'agada, so that I was concerned.
And,
you see, I never became lamdan in any sense.
Yes.
And then after Vansky, for some reason, disappeared. I think what happened with him was the army. For something, he disappeared, he couldn't go. Then I got another teacher, two more.